Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. From a university in Italy comes a study about vitamin B3, and it protects the skin cells from the effects of ultraviolet exposure, something brand new. Now, we knew that vitamin C would help, and we also knew that quercetin helps, but now vitamin B3. That's also called nicotinamide, or NAM. It's a form of B3, and research presented at a major conference shows that you should help your skin cells from the effect of, you know, being burnt and developing non-melanoma skin cancers. That's good news. That is just one of many studies we'll be sharing with you. And in a moment, they did a meta-analysis, meaning looking at many studies, and concluded that oral curcumin supplementation has a positive impact on health-related quality of life, even length of life. This is from the University of Medical Sciences. We'll get into that. But also today, an original new article that has been published on PRN.fm. And for all of you, you should know that there's some very scary stuff going on concerning 5G. On Sunday, I chose to make note. There were ball games on, and that was fun, but I was more interested in the commercials. How many were for 5G? What was their message? And the message was, beautifully produced, by the way. I mean, they're really good propagandists. They're showing pastel lights zooming across America through all the buildings and cars and your smartphones and your smart meters into your home, so that everything in your life is going to get better if you use 5G. Just the opposite is true. Everything in your life is going to be worsened because you're going to be more susceptible to electromagnetic frequency waves that will penetrate your body. And for a lot of Americans who already are, let's say, they're immune compromised, this could throw them into a state of different diseases. Who says? More than 20,000 studies and tens of thousands of scientists from around the world. We've played you the hearings before the U.S. government and state legislatures and local bodies with experts coming in, like Dr. Deborah Davis, showing you the scientific evidence. None of it made a difference. Why? It was because of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and Donald Trump, working with the telecom giants to make sure that the whole planet is covered with Elon Musk's satellites. And so unless you live someplace in rural America, you're going to be affected by 5G in a very negative way. None of this is in their advertisement. And who's one of the co-sponsors of 5G? The New York Times. So we're going to deal with that in this article. Please share this if you believe that 5G is not the best next thing to come onto our lives, but one of the worst things. In fact, the article is entitled 5G's Crimes Against Humanity. So we're hitting them with another one. Whether it makes a difference or not is up to the people reading it and what they choose to do about it. For example, the building where I live in New York, I published over 200 articles, the same article 200 times. Plus, I gave a video of an hour long of all the top experts testifying under oath before congressional hearings. And any tenant that was interested could at least be aware of what was going to happen to the building there and the block and what rights they had. And unfortunately, based upon how Bill Clinton helped the telecom industry, you have no rights. And when I say you have no rights, I mean you have zero rights. If this causes disease to you or your pet, too bad. If they have to tear down all the trees on your block so that the signal, which is a short burst signal, it only goes about a block, is not interrupted, too bad. If they cannot produce any science whatsoever showing its dangers because they haven't done the research, too bad. So this is the worst experiment, with the possible exception of the upcoming coronavirus, in American history. It's right now. It's happening now. You're being propagandized, and you'll probably pay little to no attention to it or think, oh, that's neat. I have one of those cell phones. Don't be fooled. It's all a game, and you are being gamed. We'll get into that. Also today, I didn't have a chance yesterday to have Glenn Greenwald talking about how corrupt the media has become. He's not the only one. Cheryl Atkinson, also a courageous journalist, will be there to second his comments. Then the phones will be open for your comments. That's our program. Now let's go to the latest on health and healing. So this meta-analysis, according to the study, is that as we age, a multitude of physical, mental, and emotional challenges are put into our life that we didn't count upon, weren't prepared for, hadn't planned for, have no backup plan, don't know how to deal with. And this leads to chronic disorders that we call aging. It's not aging, it's premature aging. Please understand, we've conflated dementia, Alzheimer's, pain, insomnia, urinary incontinence with aging. Those are not normal to aging, but they are absolutely normal to the average person's lifestyle. And since most people are exposed to the same advertising, for example, one of the commercials I saw on Sunday was for a hamburger. But now the hamburger has cheeses, bacon, beef. Let's see, it also had, I think, onion rings, and all on a pretzel bun. Nothing, in my opinion, is safe about that or healthy. It's all causing inflammation and disease. Far more calories than what your body can reasonably use, far more protein, far more fat, lots of trans fats, terrible for your digestive system. And yet, think of all the people seeing that, and by a certain time they see it enough, you become reflective, not at all. Reflexive, yes. You react without reason. In effect, we have a nation of Pavlovian dogs. Ring the bell, they salivate. So that's what we're doing. How many times we see the back end of a refrigerator looking from the inside out, where people would open up and take out the Bud beer and open up, take out more beer. And so then you get used to the idea, well, do I have Bud beer in my fridge? I should, you know, for the ball games. Oh, okay. This is how advertising makes us turn a want into a need, and it's not constructive. Anyhow, all of this, in my opinion, destroys the quality of life. And that also means we're going to have to increase clinical care on a medical system that itself is much of it, not all of it, but much of it actually is completely corrupt. The peer review science shows it doesn't work, yet it continues to be used, like statin drugs or synthetic hormone replacement therapy for women, or anti-anxiety and antidepressant drugs for people who have normal life issues and should be dealing with them through proper and professional counseling and not through a pharmacological approach. But they've captured the message. When you capture the message, you control the narrative. And everything today is create the message, and then people follow your narrative without questioning. Russia, Russia, Russia. Trouble is, and I am not a supporter, as anyone knows, of Donald Trump on anything. And yet, as much as I dislike Donald Trump, I dislike a coup even more. And yet we had, and still have, an ongoing coup in the United States. Rachel Maddow, all the major players in the media, have participated in it. Adam Schiff was one of the architects of it. He knows better. Under oath, everyone who testified at his Senate Intelligence Committee hearings had no evidence whatsoever from the CIA, National Security Agency. No one had evidence of Russian collusion. However, publicly, they go right from that testimony, which was honest, under oath, in secret, go right on CNN and say absolute evidence. Well, they created the narrative that the American public bought. And it was for political and ideological reasons. They have done the same thing on so many issues. The Republicans are no different. They create their own narrative, weapons of mass destruction, remember? So the trouble is you cannot trust the media, left or right. How many times did we hear how great the White Helmets were on liberal radio programs, including some popular liberal radio programs? They won an Academy Award. Well, that surprised me not at all. But then the people we had on our show, five separate journalists, except for Seymour Hersh, who didn't appear on the show, but his columns we read showed that the White Helmets are not peaceful protectors of people's health when they're injured. No, they're terrorists. They shared the same headquarters as Ms. Bealey, who was there and will be on our program next week, showed him. What's the BBC doing for her going into the war zone unaccompanied in a battle zone on the enemy side, on the terrorist side, to get the video and get the proof? There on the top floor of a building where ISIS had his headquarters, so too did the White Helmets. And yet all this was excluded from the official narrative. So now they're going after her. The BBC is. And we're going to have her on to talk about how doing the right thing by exposing corruption, you are now perceived as the criminal. They control the message because they control the media. And hence, anyone who speaks out against vaccines, 5G, GMOs, corruption, any of the things we mentioned that have not changed in 40 years. And by the way, Trump was in a little town because I used to live in Pennsylvania, Katanning, Pennsylvania. And then I lived right up near the Pennsylvania border in West Virginia, in Weirton, West Virginia, and right below Weirton's Wheeling, West Virginia. And in Katanning, Pennsylvania, everything is just very, very basic, just decent human beings. But I found that was true in Allentown and all the other places in Pennsylvania. There was a rally. It was a big rally. It was a huge rally. In fact, knowing how small the town is and how hard it's been hit by the offshoring of jobs, I didn't think there was that many people living in the town. Why would they come out? Why would they come out for Trump? No? Trump's world is completely different than theirs. For simple reason. Because no one has cared about what it is to be a working class person in the United States for at least 40 years. I'll even go further. I'll say you have to go back to Lyndon Johnson's program, though I didn't like Lyndon Johnson because he was a pathological personality, but some of the programs he sponsored were good. And then before that, of course, you had Eisenhower, not Truman, and then FDR. But you look at everything that's happened to the working middle class from the mid-1970s when offshoring occurred, all with the full support of the Reagan administration, the Bush senior administration, the Carter administration, the Ford administration, short as it was, Nixon's administration, and accelerating. And then you end up where we are today, where whole areas of America, thousands and thousands of towns and cities, are shells of what they once were. Once thriving, working class, places to live where everyone knew their neighbor, where there was peace and harmony, where there was great educational systems and social cohesiveness, where there was tolerance and acceptance. Now, these are just the bare bones of a once loving place. My own hometown, just this past year in March, I went back for a reunion. And it's a ghetto. The entire town is a ghetto. I was so disappointed by what I saw. And all this happened within 10 years because jobs left, because the factories closed down and were offshore. And that's what all my high school classmates were telling me. Everywhere you went, on every block, there was just nothing but decrepitation. In fact, I was lucky to find one house on any block that still looked like a livable house. So this is happening everywhere. So let's just quickly take a look. What has any party, what is the permanent government with all of its technocrats and bureaucrats and corporate sponsors and think tanks and foundations, oligarchs, what exactly have they done to make our lives better? So let's just look at the most important things. Right now, we know how bad Flint, Michigan's water is, and it has been corrected, by the way. Do you know that there are over 5,000 communities in the United States whose water is equally as polluted as Flint's or worse? Nothing being done. In my new film, which we hope today to get into a New York theater in the next week, and I'll let you know about that so you can attend, there's an alley. It's called Cancer Alley. And by the way, no surprise there, it also has the highest level of corona serious illnesses and deaths in the state. And on one side of the road, and we filmed it. I mean, it's literally you can pick up a rock from a person's porch and throw it across the street and you're on a chemical property. There's the smokestacks. There's the polluted water. In fact, they're spewing their chemicals that come right into people's yards. I'm talking about toxic chemicals from all these factories, one after the other, lining the whole state, going on for hundreds of miles. What has been done to help these people? In fact, there's one house that we filmed, and this is really gross. It's a small house, and they got a little tiny bathroom. And I said the water table's very high here. Yeah, it is. You dig down 5 feet, you're going to hit water. Well, how do you get a septic system? We don't have one. What do you have? Your waste has to go somewhere. Yeah, it goes out back. So it went out back, and there's a hole in the wall with a tube and everything from their toilets and sinks and showers going right out into the backyard. And you think, this can't be happening. This is a third world environment. Yeah, it's happening. But watch how many people will go down there, and most of the people are people of color, and watch how many people are told by the politicians, we'll vote for you, vote for us, and we'll change all this. They all lie. Nothing ever changes. Nothing has changed, and nothing will change. It doesn't matter who gets become president. You can like one person, hate another person, but in the end, the people controlling everything are not the people running the country. It's the people surrounding their cabinet people, the heads of industries who come in and become heads of departments, you know, like the former governor of Texas becoming head of energy, and yet he has gross bias. Perry. So that's how it works. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. The title of this article, and please share it with everyone you can. Make copies and share it with everyone who would like to see it in your building, because they're going building to building. Now, you probably won't know unless you go up to the roof that there's antenna up there. Those antenna can penetrate every room in your building. So if you're an older person or a person with cancer, or any autoimmune condition, which millions of Americans have, this is going to make you even more susceptible to all the diseases that have been documented in the peer-reviewed literature from 5G, 4G, 3G, 2G, even 1G and Wi-Fi. For those who may have watched last Sunday's NFL games, you would have noticed a predominance of advertisements hearkening the wonderful promises that the large variety of 5G technologies will bring into our lives. The ads tout the interconnectivity of all things and technological miracle underway. For the casual viewer, it would seem as if life can never be the same without it. It is the new essential and life-enhancing technology. And it must be true because, well, what CNN and MSNBC and NBC and CNN, and all of the other major networks, would they lie to us? Of course not. Everything they say must be objective because they hold the public health in trust. However, there are urgent facts that they seem to have forgotten. Maybe the director or the writer just didn't think it was important to put these little pieces of information into their advertisements. But there's an urgent need now for everyone to become focused upon what is actually happening. And first off, fiber optic technology to increase the internet speed, that's been with us for over a decade. Therefore, speed is not the primary issue on the table. People could have high connectivity and yet not be exposed to 5G's high electromagnetic frequency levels. That's what goes through the air, but the fiber cables, it's staying in a cable. It's not going from the cable into the air, into your home, into your body. But things that are wireless, That's how they get into your body. Nor could thousands of satellites orbiting the Earth be required. No, you wouldn't need any satellites. There is a far more nefarious agenda behind 5G in order to usher in the international globalist fourth industrial revolution. The World Economic Forum's slide presentation, and you can see it for yourself, quote, "Why is 5G important for the fourth industrial revolution?" End quote. It outlines the multi-trillion dollar impact advanced connectivity will have on manufacturing, wholesale, resale, smart cities and smart homes, public services, transportation, real-time banking, finance and insurance, agriculture and forestry, real estate, education, mining, health, and medicine. All that is now and will be almost completely controlled through 5G. So sadly, 5G is destined to be a permanent fixture across the nation. At present, there's barely a chance to prevent it. So why am I doing this? Why am I writing this article, Richard Gale? Why am I making this presentation across the world right now? It's not that we will not lose some battles. We will, and this will be one that we lose, clearly. But what we will do is at least in those who are wanting to know the truth so they can exercise a precautionary principle, you will at least have the truth. In the mainstream media, in the government agencies, there is no truth to be found. And that's simply the fact of it. Thousands of medical and environmental studies in the peer-reviewed literature warning of high electromagnetic frequency dangers, and thousands of international scientists signing petitions to hold its deployment are unequivocally ignored, or worse, ostracized and canceled. Despite the pandemic and lockdowns and social distancing, this has not hindered 5G's progress to connect every American into its spider web. Last December, T-Mobile reached its goal of nationwide coverage of over 1.3 million square miles. By the way, that's 34% of the United States. For its 5G network, and AT&T reached its milestone in July, which reached 179 million people connected. Nor will tribal lands, nor federal parks, nor historic sites be exempt. Trump's FCC czar and ALEC insider, Ajit Pai, has pathologized the agency to assure 5G infrastructure build-outs will be expedited in these vulnerable areas. There are no fundamental differences between Joe Biden and Donald Trump for accelerating the 5G rollout and being major cheerleaders and sponsors for this deadly and deceptive technology. Both argue that the global race to establish the Internet of Everything is critical for the U.S. to maintain its leadership in the world. Both are also committed to funding and expanding 5G's high-speed broadband into rural areas. Last year, the Trump administration awarded over $744 million, quote, to support more than 80 broadband projects benefiting more than 430,000 rural residents in 34 states, end quote. In 2016, while running in the shadow of becoming the American Legislative Exchange Council's president, Donald Trump's campaign, as expected, won the financial support of the primary 5G players, AT&T, Verizon, Charter Communications, Comcast, Intel, and Qualcomm. However, this year, the tides tipped enormously towards Biden, who has received $97 million from the communications tech sector versus Trump's $18 million. Alphabet, that's Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, AT&T, and Comcast overwhelmingly contributed to Biden's war chest. So here's a question for you. How many of these platforms, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, AT&T, and Comcast, have allowed documentaries, have allowed editorials or investigative reporting journalists to present information that would challenge 5G's safety and efficacy? How many? We did the homework. Why don't you try it? And then see what happens to those who do publish articles and how they're banned from Facebook and Google, but then vilified on Wikipedia. Amidst all of the hype and endless advertisements to woe Americans into 5G dream of electronic comforts and efficacies of life, the results thus far are rather dismal. Now, here's what you weren't told. There may or may be more hype than fact. USA Today reported that although the telecom companies are rapidly deploying transmission lanes, not lines, lanes, they must use lower frequencies, which means that speeds are a little different than 4G. To gain access to 5G speed capabilities requires users to have a technology called mmWave that permits data to be transmitted at higher frequencies. The caveat is that mmWave signals don't travel far and are highly sensitive to multiple interferences, including walls and windows. You would have to be outside, standing still, and in the absence of moving people and vehicles, the article states. Well, who does that? Nobody. To even benefit from it, Verizon relies solely upon mmWave, which are only functional for short distances such as dense urban cities and require more installations. However, measurements seem to indicate that people were only accessing real 5G services 0.4% of the time. Not even, that's 99.6% of the time they weren't getting it. Furthermore, 5G phones, quote, haven't been any better than 4G phones, end quote. But aren't they selling you new phones to go with your new 5G? Yes, they are. Of course, in order to undermine these apparent flaws, articles advocating 5G's benefits are quick to note that the technology is still being developed. In conclusion, the only major difference is that users are being exposed to more dangerous electromagnetic frequency radiation. No discussion, no open dialogue, no debate is permitted to conscientiously evaluate this Orwellian phenomenon. Criticisms are censored across the left and right spectrum in network and cable news. Yet for the older generations, they have witnessed this charade before. During the first half of the 20th century, medical journals and associations advertised tobacco's benefits. Whether physicians' preferences were Chesterfield or Lucky Strike did not matter. The message was that smoking was good for you. However, neither a federal agency nor the Surgeon General's office exposed any of these lies. Rather, it was from one single whistleblower within the tobacco industry. All of the corporate executives knowingly lied under oath about the dangers or addictive nature of tobacco before Congress. Not one was held accountable. Only after the scandal became public did a light bulb switch on about the decades of illness and death these lies had perpetrated. Best estimates, maybe 10 million preventable deaths of Americans. That's a lot of people to die, for a whole industry to benefit and the government to be complicit, because it knew from the patents held that it was addictive and could cause disease. It chose to side with the proprietary interest of the corporations against the best interest of the public. Everyone will be affected by 5G's radiation, but it will not require 3 decades to observe its injurious effects. Unlike cigarettes, nobody has a choice whether she or he, or whatever you choose, wishes to be exposed to 5G or not. It is all pervasive. Every person on the planet will be exposed. This is a consequence of what happens when an entire nation is trapped into carelessly trusting a media empire ruled by serial liars, sociopaths, and masters of disinformation campaigns for and on behalf of private corporate interest. The article was posted on PRN.fm. Please share it if you are concerned about 5G. If you're not, then ask yourself, why not? What is the likely outcome of distancing yourself from this? Okay, we're going to take a break and come back, and we're going to go directly to Glenn Greenwald. We have just enough time to play half of his comments and about 5 minutes of Cheryl Atkinson. We're going to go from one to the other in just a few seconds. Please stay with us.
Yeah. people through sort of step by step what happened here. And also, you know, was this over just this one article about Hunter Biden, or was this kind of a broader schism that's been brewing for some time?
It's definitely part of a broader schism that's been brewing for some time, although even in the absence of that, even if things had been perfect, I would never accept somebody telling me that I can't publish my views or perspectives without having other people first agree with what it is that I'm saying. So even if everything had been perfect, I think this probably would have happened anyway. But no, as I detailed, I had a growing dissatisfaction with the direction of The Intercept. And a lot of this, you know, I think people have to understand is the way that I've always written is based in how I began writing, which is I didn't go to Columbia Journalism School and then try and get a job at the New York Times. I opened a blog for free in 2005 and just began expressing my views about what I was seeing in the Bush administration, the war on terror. And then I would hit publish. And that's how I built an audience, was because I was being so free in my expression and candid and about my tone and talking like a real human being. And so I never wanted to enter media outlets. And when they began trying to invite me to go and join those media outlets, my condition was always I need to keep the same exact editorial freedom where I post directly to the internet without editorial intervention, except in rare cases like the Snowden case or the Brazil reporting, or where it could give rise to legal liability. And this has always been the condition of any place that I went, in written into my contract, Salon, The Guardian. And obviously, I didn't go and create a new media outlet when I created The Intercept in order to impose greater limits on my own freedom. Nobody would do that, and I didn't either. So I've always had that freedom to publish directly to the internet without anyone intervening, which is why I've been able over the last 4 years to be able, for example, to publish so much skepticism about Russiagate when it was horrifying my colleagues at The Intercept who were on board with Russiagate and knew that it was making their liberal friends angry. It was only because I had that right. So that right is sacrosanct to me, to be able to express my views without having to negotiate the tone I'm using or what it is that I'm saying to appease other people's ideological preferences or their own views of what is correct or incorrect. And that's why I encouraged them. And I said, look, if you don't agree with everything I'm saying about the Hunter Biden emails, I totally understand that it's a very debatable issue, then you should actually go and write your own article and say why what I'm saying is wrong and have the air that debate, air that dissent instead of suppressing it. But the reality is that the reason they didn't want to do that is because in 2016, The Intercept was one of those publications like The New York Times that was blamed for Trump's winning because we did do a lot of reporting on the Hillary emails because that was our job as reporters. And they didn't want to spend the next 4 years, if Trump won, having their friends say, oh, look, you did it again. You published an article about Joe Biden before the election. Or even if Trump lost, saying, oh, look, you were trying to help Trump. That's the reality. They were captive to fears about what people on Twitter would say, what their friends and colleagues would say. And they just didn't want me reporting anything that would reflect on negatively on Joe Biden for that reason.
So, Glenn, The Intercept responded to you yesterday. I'll just read a part of what they say. They say the narrative Glenn presents about his departure is teeming with distortion and inaccuracies, all of them designed to make him appear as a victim rather than a grown person throwing a tantrum. You published your email correspondence yesterday with those editors over the said censorship of your article there. Could you just lay out the actual accuracies here about and address their response?
Sure. I mean, look, you know, in order to explain to the public, including my own readership, why I was leaving the media outlet I created with great fanfare, I obviously had to be honest about my dissatisfactions with it. So I understand that the people who are still at The Intercept need to defend themselves, which means attacking me. And that's fine. But this is not a case where anyone needs to figure out who's telling the truth. I said from the beginning I was going to publish all of the information in the name of transparency that The Intercept has often failed to provide for itself, most notoriously in the Reality Winner case, where to this very day it never has explained to the public why that happened, how it happened, who did that. And I was furious about that. That was one of the major fights I had with them. And so I didn't want to be like that, be that way. So I published the correspondence, all of it I had with my editors surrounding their attempt to censor my article. And it was very clear what they said, which is, we're not going to let you publish this unless you remove all of the sections that talk about Joe Biden and Ukraine and Burisma and Joe Biden and China, and instead just make it a very narrow, much more stripped down version of this article by talking about your media criticisms. And I said, look, if there's a factual inaccuracy in the article, of course you should, I want you to identify that, but you haven't. But I'm not going to take out the parts that are critical of Joe Biden and just make it a media critique, in part because on principle that's wrong, but also because the media critique that they didn't pursue this story aggressively enough makes no sense unless you explain why there's an important story here in the first place. And you can just see in the emails that that was what they were saying. We're not going to publish this unless the sections about Biden are removed.
So let me ask you this, Glenn, and I speak sort of candidly. Like, I think a lot of people on the left weren't sure how to handle this yesterday for a couple of reasons. Number one, because so many of us had such great, incredible respect for you. But also maybe because the bar has been so lowered. The Intercept has been one of the only left-leaning outlets or independent outlets or sort of mainstream outlets that has covered Biden critically at all. Ryan Grimm obviously broke the initial story about Tara Reid's allegations being suppressed by the Time's Up organization. There's been other critical reporting of Democrats, the uncovering of the Alex Morse smear campaign that went down. So it's sort of like, you know, we see at least some critical and honest reporting coming out there. Can you speak to that part? And then also, the other piece that's complicated is I see a lot of people who are frankly acting in bad faith who want to use your legitimate critique to smear basically every journalist that's working at The Intercept, some of whom I know you believe also are doing excellent work. Can you talk to those two pieces?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, if I were to list the journalists for whom I have the greatest respect and admiration, you know, like say the top 15 or 20 in the United States, at least several of them, three or four, are people currently reporting at The Intercept, one of whom, as I said in that article, I said that.
Okay, at least you have the basis of it. The whole piece is 13 minutes long. I'm concerned because there are people on the left who support Glenn Greenwald and will continue to do so. Where he ends up now is anyone's guess. But there was one thing he said later on. He did this just to renegotiate a new contract, and he made it very clear. The Intercept is the highest paying media source in the country. He said something like, just people working, you know, a little bit each day get over several hundred thousand dollars a year, plus they pay for his personal security in Brazil, where he's under attack by Bolsonaro, the president. And they pay for all of his travel, and they pay for a whole support team and all of his research. Let me tell you, that's a lot of money. I'm guessing around $500,000 a year. There's no way in the world any journalist is going to make that today. So he is making a huge sacrifice by walking away from The Intercept. But in his life, he doesn't believe that other people, without his knowledge or his facts, should have the right to censor what he has done. And that's his commitment. Another person did that was Chris Hedges. And so he is just one of a handful of people who have chosen to walk away from very lucrative and protected environments. He could work there the rest of his life. He's going to find on the outside it's a whole altogether different world. But good for Glenn Greenwald. Now let's hear what Cheryl Atkinson has to say, because she too was a victim of censorship, applying political pressure when she was at CBS to eliminate or not play certain stories that she had absolute facts on because it went against court and certain corporate sponsors' interest. But she's giving it a little different perspective on right now purging real progressives out of all positions of power in the United States. I mean, just purging them. And so they're relegated to the sidelines, oblivion, retirement, but their voices are mute when they should be loud and clear on public
phones. There are all kinds of people paying a lot of money to pull strings behind the scenes to make sure we see certain things on TV and on the news and read things on the news, and that we do not see certain things on the news. I think that for reporters and people who provide information from any source, actually providing truthful, factual information has become something that is looked as something to control by other people. It's looked as something to controversialize depending on what it says and what the facts say. And it's becoming harder and harder for people interested in accuracy, fairness, and facts to simply do the job of telling these stories or those facts without censors and curations and interruptions from propagandists and special interests. As I talk about in Slanted, the act of simply being down the middle and fair has become such an anomaly in the managed information landscape that if you do that now, you are branded as conservative simply because, for whatever reason, you're not following the liberal party line, which is now considered the default. So as you stay in the center, that is a position that is viewed by the propagandists, or at least portrayed as farther and farther to the right when it's not. But it's all a part of trying to controversialize facts that are uncomfortable, to try to keep stories and information that certain interests don't want told from getting told. And then by personally attacking and controversializing the outlets or the reporters who are not following the party line in such a way that there is hope on the part of the propagandists that a large section of the public will not believe or will not listen to the accurate facts. Instead, they'll just chew on the propaganda and the spun facts. It's a word that when I first heard it used in the news industry, I didn't really understand what it meant. And now I say it all the time to myself. I write about it. But I realize that a lot of people, they hear narratives and that's not necessarily the word they may apply to it or the phrase that they may associate with it. A narrative, I say, is a storyline that certain interests want to be told to accomplish a different goal. So they may make sure that a common thread of a story, a narrative, runs through most any factual context until it even changes the story or, you know, plays fast and loose with the facts or even changes the facts to accomplish a storyline, an overarching storyline that they're trying to advance to the general public or a certain audience. That's a narrative. So in the book, I give examples such as climate change may be a perfectly valid discussion to have in certain contexts. But then when you see on the news that every event, let's say somebody ties to climate change to the exclusion of counterpoints and other scientific views, well, that's furthering a narrative to the exclusion of the facts and fairness and accuracy. And we see that now. We've seen the narrative largely take over the news as we know it today compared to what it was really just about 15 years ago. The narrative demands in this current environment that you not say those things. That's the frightening thing, the idea that there are now thoughts and science and views and facts that are deemed to be unacceptable in the information landscape on social media or on the news. I can think of three other factors, and we've reported on all of those on my Sunday TV show, Full Measure. There is the lack of properly clearing the brush, which is a known factor. They haven't done a good job and they've complained they haven't had the money to do it. So we've talked about the financial battles over that. Secondly, there are arsonists, as you know, that have been caught setting fires. That's certainly not climate change. And thirdly, we reported on this extensively last season. The power company PG&E has paid billions of dollars to victims of some of these worst wildfires in California because their power lines started the fire. They did not start a number of fires because they did not properly maintain the aging power lines, and they would spark during certain weather events. And with the brush not properly cut away, these would lead to these catastrophic wildfires that a lot of people are improperly attributing to climate change. You can look that up at fullmeasure.news. If you search PG&E, you'll find that segment. And I find a lot of people don't know, when we did this story, we had no agenda. We just set out to go look at the California wildfires. We've done quite a bit of reporting. And then we learned that there was this huge court case, and there's been a settlement with this giant power company that's been ordered by the court to pay the victims of some of these horrible fires. And that's why, by the way, there are the blackouts and the power goes out in California during certain times when they're afraid that the power lines may spark more fires. I don't know why that isn't more commonly known and reported, because it's well established and documented in these court cases. But again, it's because it has to do with a narrative driving the news in such a way that when you turn on the TV or read your information, unless a certain special interest has put that information in front of the reporters or on the news, a lot of times you're not likely to see it if it's off narrative facts and science and information. I'd say 90 to 95%. You know, reporters used to take great pride, and there's still some who do and would if they could, take great pride in digging up original stories that the interests do not want us to report, that no PR firm or political figures and super PACs and nonprofits that actually work for special interests, that they're always bringing these story ideas to the table, trying to get them to float to the top, sending out talking points, planting them with the analysts that we've hired to be on the news. But our job, I believe, is to find those other stories that they're trying to push off the air, that the special interests and the powerful money interests don't want told, and the angles that they don't want us to know about. That used to be how we approached our industries, particularly investigative reporting. But in general,
again, that's just part of Cheryl Atkinson's discussion. Well, we're almost up to the end of our segment for our sister stations around the country, and we will continue on for those listening just on PRN. But I was just informed that Belia is on next Tuesday night's Progressive Commentary Hour. Tonight, we have Whitney Webb. Now, if you've never heard Whitney Webb or seen her, she's relatively new on the scene. A phenomenal researcher. I mean, an encyclopedic mind that has everything just right at her fingertip, meticulous journalist. And she's a senior staff writer and reporter for Mint Press News. And she also has written for The Last American Vagabond, another post site that I recommend, and also the podcast Unlimited Hangout. We're going to talk tonight about something that is not discussed today. Unrolling artificial intelligence surveillance, its monitoring and data collection under the specter of the COVID pandemic. It's getting really ugly and really bad, and especially for people traveling to New York. The governor just signed an executive order that you have to have a negative COVID test before coming to the city, then be quarantined for 3 days, and on the fourth day take another test, and you must be negative. And if you're not negative, if you're positive, then you have to stay quarantined for another 12 days. Well, that means that for at least 15 to 16 days, you're going to be in a single place and they can track you. And now they have these apps that will track everything, every movement you go. So they'll know if you're not staying in an apartment or a house or a hotel room, and which hotel is going to want you to be in there if you're positive. And think of the enormous decimation that's going to do to people who would otherwise travel to the city for business, but want to come and go. And so there's some exclusions if you come and go overnight and in the tri-state area, but this is just going to be one more negative for New York to face. For our WBA audience, thank you for listening, and listen tonight on the Progressive Radio Network. For everyone else, we have some more information for you, and I'll continue to share it now. And also, I'm going to open up our phones for people here on the Progressive Radio Network. Anything you've heard that you'd like to discuss or add your two cents into, please feel free to do so. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Happy to have you on so that we can hear what you have to say. And in the interim, I'll share a few more things I think are important. Here's how draconian it's becoming with COVID. Now, mind you, the legitimacy of the virus has been established. Its lethality has been established in comorbid people. But its safety, effectiveness, or lack of death and severe disease in healthy people, younger people in particular, college students, means that we should never have closed down society, and these people should be able to go back to work and go to school and have normal lives. Those people who have multiple comorbidities or are older and have comorbidities, and by the way, the same principles apply to older people who are healthy and have no comorbidities and keep their immune system strong. They're a normal part of society. You don't see the spike in deaths there. We've studied the statistics, but so have Nobel Prize-winning biostatisticians and epidemiologists, and everybody now agrees that there's been a wrong approach to this. So if we help the people who are sick overcome their comorbidities, help them with holistic approaches to diabetes, obesity, heart disease, cancers, and we can. These are real and proven sciences of getting people healthy and then help other people prevent these who are older, then that will save a lot of lives. Also, we should demand the media tell us. If you're saying that 9.1 million people, as of yesterday, the New York Times said, are cases of COVID, a case is different than testing positive or negative. Knowing the high degree of false positive and negatives from an inaccurate PCR test. So they're trying to make it seem like there's 9.2 million Americans walking around who've got the virus in their body and are sick. That's not true. That's where they have weaponized the narrative, as Cheryl Atkins would say. So we've got to deal with this. But mayors are jumping on board. Quote, this is from Jordan Davidson. The Michigan Department of Health and Human Services is requiring restaurants, barbershops, tattoo parlors, recreational facilities, and entertainment establishments to record the names, contact information, and visit times of all customers to, quote, aid with contact tracing. Any establishment that does not comply is threatened with a maximum $200 fine, a misdemeanor charge, punishable up to 6 months in prison. 6 months in prison. If in the state of Michigan, you fail to get someone's information that just may have come in and bought some food from you, and a $1,000 civil fine for violating the state's emergency orders. The order announced Friday comes as Michigan's Democratic governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and her administration began backtracking on the state's latest reopening plan and tightened COVID-19 restrictions. Take a look. Look at the countries that no longer have a problem with death from COVID, like, for example, Australia, and look at Sweden, look at these countries, and they did not engage in the same process we did. So I'm suggesting people pay careful attention, because otherwise you can end up becoming a victim of a bureaucracy that takes away all of your rights and freedoms. And if they're going to take away those rights and freedoms, they're going to make sure that you're tested with a false test and you test positive. You're going to be forced into quarantine with some form of monitoring that you have to have on you, some form of electronic device, and they're even planning this now for airports. I'll get to that. In fact, there's a new study from another source that says, quote, will COVID vaccines increase risk of AIDS virus? And it's a long article, but when they were doing research on a COVID vaccine, they were also using some of the genetic materials that could end up causing an AIDS positive reaction. So there's a lot going wrong here, and it's only going to get worse for those who need to be in control. In fact, according to Mint Press, Raul Diago, quote, the new COVID-19 security measures will make health a prerequisite for travel. As a multi-sector global response to the coronavirus tightens the noose around civil liberties, Common Pass stands out as one of the most appalling and dangerous attacks on basic human rights. Imagine standing at a TSA security checkpoint on your way home for the holidays. You're getting ready to go through the awkward travel procedures instituted almost immediately after 9/11, when the Transportation and Security Administration was created, and air travel in the United States morphed into a search and seizure operation with the implied possibility of your detention and interrogation. The initial outrage, such expressions of implicit state violence caused early eventually gave way to begrudging acceptance. But now, a new layer of security that could restrict freedom of movement even further is being rolled out at several airports of entry, in partnership with health technology industry leaders, academic institutions, government health agencies. A new digital certificate called Common Pass, designed to serve as a clearinghouse mechanism for passengers based on a health diagnosis, underwent its first transatlantic test October 21st under the watchful eye of the Centers for Disease Control and U.S. Customs Border Protection at Heathrow Airport in London. Their group of select participants embarked upon United Flight 15 to Newark, New Jersey, after being screened and tested for COVID-19 at the point of departure in a largely ceremonial exercise that included initiative of the people participating in it. The app's first trial run took place with much less media fanfare. And then it goes on to talk about how you're going to have this Commons Project Pass, and on it will be digital material. Boy, that is dangerous. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.